Right now, we're welcoming our friend Wendy Patrick, attorney, media analyst, theologian. Wendy, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So we're going steady these days. We've got a lot of stuff for you, including what went on in Mississippi and North Carolina. Mississippi passes this religious freedom bill. I just want to get your take on it and how you understand it.
Well, I'm glad you asked, Dr. Drew, because a lot of the rhetoric surrounding these types of bills, and we're seeing them pop up in several different states, is largely based on emotion, and in addition to the text of the law. What I would always advise listeners to do is please read the text of the law for a really good understanding as to the way these states are attempting, now whether they're successful or not is another question, but they're attempting to frame the narrative as narrowly as possible. I'll give you an example with this Mississippi bill. What it does, if you read the text, is it protects religious convictions surrounding three areas. The first is marriage and how do we define marriage. The second is sexual relations. And the third is biological sex. So there's nothing in the bill about denying services that are non-marriage related or non-family related, if you will, in the case of adoptions, to just people because they're members of the LGBT community. The fact that some people interpret it that way is very troubling.
Hold on, wait, this is the Mississippi law, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Wasn't North Carolina a little different, though?
North Carolina was a bit different that it focused on primarily using the bathroom that corresponds with your biological sex
right.
at birth.
I think that was the one I heard about more than anything.
Well, that's also an aspect, though, of the Mississippi bill. It's one defining gender, and what does that mean? So the fact that these states are attempting, what they're really trying to do is trying to attempt a compromise where governments can't fine or take action against religious institutions that follow these rules, if in fact they're based on sincerely held religious faith. That's the gist of what these bills are designed to do. Now, what the counterargument is, and really what the emotional reaction is, well, is there going to be a byproduct? In other words, even if they're designed to protect religious freedom, is a result of these bills being passed going to be discrimination?
Right.
Which is one of the reasons that the proponents of these bills are very vocal about the fact that that's not what they're designed to do. And in fact, that would be actionable. Discrimination is against both federal and state law. And there's nothing within the text of these bills that sanctions discrimination. What we're going what remains to be seen is how the courts interpret these bills, because likely there's going to be more cases like the Kim Davis case, right? The Kentucky clerk who wouldn't sign them. There's going to be more of those cases springing up, and really it's going to be an exercise for the courts to determine, well, how are we going to interpret this? Are we going to interpret it as a bill that protects religious freedom, or as a bill that has a byproduct of discrimination that we just can't get around? We're all going to be watching those cases very closely.
So all right, I got to take a little break here, but my head is spinning a little bit because when you get into the weeds of this, it does get, oh, that's right. I'm sorry, Steve was just talking to me about something, and I don't have to take a break because we can keep talking here. The upset was not over the weeds of the law. The people that were upset were upset about the fact that it sort of dials back hard-fought territory that was designed to diminish discrimination and improve the rights of everyone. And although I understand that we want to protect the rights of religious freedom, it seems to not be cutting a narrow path between the two. It seems to be setting the scale in one particular direction. Am I stating that in a way that's fair?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to state it because it's one of these laws that it's so hard to find a compromise because necessarily when you say we're going to protect the rights of people that act according to their sincerely held religious beliefs, there are going to be some segments of the population, in this case the LGBT community, that is going to be impacted. In other words, if they want to get married, they have to go to an institution that's going to uphold the law, but that's going to say, well, this doesn't violate my sincerely held religious beliefs. In other words, they can't go to an institution seeking to get married where the pastor there is, subscribes to the biblical definition of marriage and says, this particular act is something I can't participate in. Why don't you go to the church down the street? They'll be happy to do it for you. Same thing with organizations and merchants that provide marriage-related services. So these are the cake bakers, the dressmakers, the wedding photographers, the DJs. I mean, you can imagine the list goes on and on. they have that same right to say, personally, we are not going to participate in that. In other words, you can't just say, I'm not going to serve somebody in a restaurant
because they
practice a lifestyle. But you can say you can't have a wedding celebration at this restaurant if, in fact, it would violate the sincerely held religious beliefs of the owners. So that's where there's this overlap, and that's where there's the tension that is undeniable between the protection of people's religious liberties and upholding the law with respect to everyone.